Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. We are discussing Sandeha Nivarini, the second beautiful volume that Bhagwan penned for all mankind way back in the late 50s and early 60s. And we are in chapter 7 of this beautiful book. Sandeha Nivarini, as many of you who are following this program are already aware, this is about clearing the doubts of the devotees. And Bhagwan himself is the person who is asking the questions. He dons the role of a devotee, seeking solutions for the conundrums of the mind, and he again dons the role of the master, clarifying all these dilemmas. But this chapter 7 of Sandeha Nivarini is a little unique, because in this chapter there are no doubts, there are no questions asked. And when the bhakta, when the devotee says that, Swami, I don't have any questions, Swami says, wow, very good. Swami says, understand that when these doubts do not come of themselves, nor are they entertained by you, that is to be considered as purity, Swami says. When these two happen, that is when the doubts don't naturally come to you, and you also ensure that you don't encourage them. Swami says that itself is purity. That is one-pointedness. And then the devotee says, Swami, I don't have any doubts, but I am here in your presence, so just tell me, what are the acts that we should do to deserve the grace of the divine? How can we attain your proximity? How can we be near and dear to you? And that is when Bhagwan says that it is like Mother Parvati asking Shiva, oh Shiva, it is difficult to retain in memory the Sahasranama, the thousand names of the Lord. It takes a long time to learn and repeat them. So please tell me one single name that is the essence of all the thousand. Swami says, your question is something like this. You want something very simple. And Bhagwan does not disappoint. And Swami says, the essence of all the names is same. But still, I am giving you now some selected jewels which are very essential. Treasure them, experience them, put them into practice and derive joy therefrom. In fact, decorate yourself with these jewels, Swami says. And then Bhagwan goes on enumerating one after another 46 such gems, 46 principles which can add beauty, color, and joy to our lives. And Swami says, treasure them, experience them, put them into practice and derive joy therefrom. And in the last few episodes of Vahini Satsang, we have been taking each of these points, each of these tenets that Bhagwan has written. It starts with the first one being on love. Swami says, love should be considered as the very breath of life. It is no surprise that Bhagwan begins by love. And then Swami talks about how among all the forms of love, man's first endeavor should be to love the Lord the most. So this is the fourth point. And that is how we have been discussing one point after another. The sixth point was, those who seek the bliss of the Atma should not go after the pleasures of their senses. The 12th point was, the spirit of self-sacrifice is at the heart of all-encompassing compassion towards all beings, and so on. And today we are in the 33rd tenet, We are going to discuss what Bhagwan has mentioned in the 33rd point of chapter 7 of Sandhya Nivarini. But before I go into that, I want to share with you something that I discovered just 2 days ago. And this is something that set me thinking about the beautiful ways by which the divine works. I came across the beautiful text Sadhana Panchakam by Sri Adi Shankaracharya. It is said towards the end of his brief 32-year lifespan, as we all know what Adi Shankaracharya achieved in just 3 decades of his life was absolutely stupendous. He organized the Hinduism religion. He was the one who established so many pilgrim centers, who revived this whole philosophy of Advaita and recharged the country, brought to fore the true nature of Bharat. So, towards the end of his life, bringing all his experience to bear, they say the great Bhashyakara, Sri Adi Shankaracharya, he wrote a poem. And this poem has 5 verses. Each of these 5 verses have 8 instructions. So 5 into 8, there are total of 40 instructions which Adi Shankara gave towards the end of his life. And because these 5 verses together comprise this poem, this beautiful work is called Panchakam. And because this is what Shankaracharya laid down, what will help the spiritual growth of every aspirant, it is called Sadhana Panchakam. Because all of these points are remarkable for their deep insight. They are considered very precious, very priceless. In fact, the principles of sadhana that is mentioned in the Sadhana Panchakam is so important that it is also called as Upadesha Pancharatnam, the 5 precious gems of advice. Just like we have Pancharatna Kritis, which are 5 beautiful songs describing the glory of the divine, these 5 verses of Adi Shankara's are called Upadesha Pancharatnam. These are 5 precious gems of advice for any spiritual aspirant. And the way they are laid down also is very methodical. It is not in a haphazard manner. It is presented in a logical sequence. And many scholars liken the Sadhana Panchakam to an inclined ladder, because sadhana is a constant and continuous endeavor to climb step by step, even if the obstacles and impediments are difficult. But the step by step process is what takes us to the path of perfection. And they say if one follows these principles laid down by Adi Shankara, they will achieve the highest goal. They will get the greatest bliss. And when I read these 40 principles laid down by Adi Shankaracharya, the only thought that came to me is, Swami, so beautifully you brought all this back into our consciousness once again through the principles that you have written in Sandhya Nivarini. It is him who had inspired Adi Shankaracharya at that point in time to bring all these sacred principles into mankind's consciousness, into the heart of every Indian, at a time when the country and the people of this land needed this dose of spiritual injunction. And the same one who had inspired Adi Shankara, now when he took the human form, Swami again reiterated and now clarified, now elaborated what was 40 points. Now Swami has given 46 points in Sandhya Nivaranya, and I cannot but relate all the points that Adi Shankara had written to what Bhagwan has laid down in this chapter 7 of Sandhya Nivarani. It almost feels like you don't need to read any other chapter. Somehow that is the feeling every time you get when you take up any chapter of the Vahinis. Each one is so profound and each one is so clear and so perfect in itself, and each one is so powerful that if you just take this, that's enough to liberate you. And the same you feel for chapter 7 also. Chapter 7 has 46 points, 46 principles for us to practice in her life, and so beautifully they map to what Adi Shankaracharya had given the world in his Sadhana Panchakam. Shankaracharya says, study the Vedas daily, perform diligently the duties ordained by them, dedicate all those actions as worship unto God, renounce all desires in the mind. And what does Swami say in chapter 7? You must possess control of the senses, a peaceful demeanor, and a spirit of renunciation. Swami says the spirit of self-sacrifice is at the heart of all encompassing compassion towards all beings. In Sadhana Panchakam, Shankaracharya says, wash away the hordes of sin in the bosom. And what does Swami say in Sandhya Nivarani? Try to keep check the five sins that the body commits. Keep these five sins under check. Killing, adultery, theft, drinking intoxicants and meat eating. The sacred life can reach the highest if these can be completely avoided, Swami says. Adi Shankaracharya says, recognize that the pleasures of sense objects are riddled with pain. And Swami says, those who seek the bliss of the Atma should not go after the pleasures of the senses. Shankaracharya says, seek the self with consistent endeavor. Escape from the bondage of home. And Swami says, renunciation is, the spirit of renunciation is what should be cultivated by every person. Truth should become the life breath of man. Shankaracharya says, filter sinful adharmic likes and dislikes, recognize the inherent defects of material pursuits. And Swami says, one must always be vigilant without a moment's carelessness against the eight sins that the mind perpetrates: kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, envy, hatred and pride. Man's primary duty is to keep all these things at a safe distance. From this moment, avoid all bad habits. Do not delay or postpone. They do not contribute the slightest joy or happiness. This is what Bhagwan has written. Like this, as you read the Upadesha Pancharatna of Adi Shankaracharya and you read Sandhya Nivarini, you cannot but just thank Bhagwan for coming back into our lives and bringing these gems into our consciousness so that we take those efforts to practice them at least now. Shankaracharya says, avoid perverse arguments. And Swami says, do not respond to the words of the wicked. It is good to keep them at a distance. In fact, do not have any relationship with such people. Cultivate the virtue such as Shanti, Adi Shankaracharya says. And Swami says, patience is all the strength that man needs. Like this, Shankaracharya says, avoid wasteful talks. And Swami says, be always on the alert against the four sins which the tongue is prone to commit: speaking falsehood, speaking ill of others, talking too much, backbiting. Endure all the pairs of opposites, heat, cold, and the like, Shankaracharya says, and Bhagwan has emphasized in Sandhya Nivarani. Bear with fortitude both loss and grief. Search for that which will benefit you and grant you joy. Do not get welled up when people praise you. Do not feel dejected when people blame you. This is the 36th point of chapter 7 of Sandhya Nivarani. And Shankaracharya in the last verse says, in solitude, live joyously. Even in solitude, live joyously. And the 35th point of Sandhya Nivarani, chapter 7 is, yield not to cowardice. Hold on to Ananda. Hold on to Ananda. Adi Shankaracharya says, live joyously, even in solitude. And Swami says, hold on to Ananda. Don't give scope to fear. Yield not to cowardice. In fact, this is the 35th point, and this is the point we need to discuss today. We had done 33rd and 34th point in the earlier episodes. And as I was thinking about this 35th principle that Bhagwan has laid down, what came to my mind is that beautiful episode from Bhagwan's life during the inauguration of Prashanti Nilayam Ashram, November 23rd, 1950. Swami was carried in the palanquin through the narrow lanes of Puttaparthi and then to his ancestral home. Swami's parents and other ladies of the family, the Ratnakaram family, offered aarti to Swami. And on the way back to Prashanti Nilayam, the procession halted at the old mandir and aarti was offered again. And then the procession continued and it reached the Prashanti Nilayam, the new mandir, around 1 p.m. And one very beautiful thing that happened, which people who were fortunate to be there witnessed, was how when they saw the brow of Bhagwan's forehead, they saw a bright spot in the center where Shiva is pictured by sages as having the third eye. In the third eye spot of Bhagwan's forehead, they saw a bright spot. And even as this was happening, Bhagwan, playfully sitting on the palanquin, would take flower petals and Swami would scatter them on the milling crowd. And the most amazing thing happened when Bhagwan dispersed these flower petals. In the middle of the air, each petal was transformed. Each petal was changed from being a mere flower petal into becoming a divine souvenir. And so some of the petals became silver lockets with the figure of Swami on one side and Shirdi Baba on the other side. Some other flower petals turned into rings, coins, pendants, candies, raisins, nuts. Each one caught the petal. But when they opened their hands, it was a lovely surprise. That is how beautiful the inauguration of Prashanti Nilayam was. But one very interesting thing that happened during this lovely scene is that before the palanquin touched the ground, Swami indicated to the bearers to pause, and then Swami took again a profuse heap of flower petals, and Swami now showered them on the devotees with a lot of gusto. And as these flowers touched the ground, they had all become silver coins with images of Swami inscribed on them. And along with Bhagwan's image, there was the phrase, why fear when I am here? And this was written in many Indian languages and in English. imagine the ecstasy of the people who received this from Bhagwan's hands while he did this amazing miracles as Prashanti Nilayam was being unfurled for humanity. But for me, what is most important is Prashanti Nilayam inauguration day. Swami is distributing, Swami is throwing these flowers which are forming into his images, but with this magical phrase, "Why fear when I am here?" And to me, this is very, very significant. Swami is declaring to the world, and he is doing it so beautifully, why you have to worry? You be in Ananda, because I am there. Give up cowardice. Give up all these anxiousness. Give up all these anxieties. I am here. Why do you fear? This is the message of Bhagwan. And Swami is telling this in Sandhya Nivarani. Yield not to cowardice. Hold on to Ananda. And I remember in many discourses, Bhagwan used to say, how man is bogged down by all sorts of worries. Swami said, to be born is a worry. Puttinoka chinta, chavu chinta, sansaram chinta, bardhekamoka chinta, balyakalam chinta. Swami used to say, how to be born is a worry, to be on the earth is a worry, the world is a cause of worry, the death also is a worry. Childhood is a worry, old age is a worry, life is a worry, failure is a worry, actions and difficulties cause worry. Even happiness is a mysterious worry. Everything is a worry for people today. In fact, if there is no worry, then they worry. Why today there is no worry to worry? So, Swami says, when you have so many worries and you keep creating worries, how can you ever be in peace? Swami says, how can you lead your life carrying this burden of so many worries on your head? What can you achieve when you are enmeshed in so many anxieties? How can you walk on the right path in your life? And then Swami says, what is the shape of worry? There is no shape of worry. It is mentally created fear. Worry is nothing but mentally created fear. We imagine and we worry. And Swami says, each worry is like a naya paisa. It is like a single paisa. 1 rupee has 100 paisa. And Swami says 100 rupees has 10,000 paise. If you have to carry 10,000 paise with you, it is going to be very heavy, isn't it? So what does the Lord do? The Lord says, give me all these 10,000 naya paisa. I will give you a crisp, light, easy to carry and safely to be preserved 100 rupee note. And Swami says, all you have to do is just give all these worries to the Lord and God will give you a 100 rupee note, which is very easy. You don't have any problem. My dear, surrender to me the bundle of your worries. Pass on your burden to the Lord, Swami says. But then, so many people ask, if I leave everything to God, then what about my duties? I have my own duties to do. I have to earn money. I have to look after my spouse. I have to look after my children. There are so many things to do. How can I just surrender to God? How to do it? And then Swami says, I'm not asking you to give up any of your duties. Do your duties, but how you do your duties is what matters. And then Swami gives a very beautiful example. Suppose in a drama you are performing the role of a father, and in the drama you have a son who is afflicted with some disease. You are worried about that son who is sick. So in the drama you are concerned about that sick son, but truly you are not the father and he is not your son and he is not suffering from any disease. You know that all that is only acting. That is a net drama. Even while you are acting, you are very well aware that you are not that father and that boy is not really your son. You are just only acting. You are only doing your role. And you have to do that to perfection. But you don't forget who you actually are. And Swami says, similarly, you have to do your duties, play your role, but don't forget who you actually are. How foolish it will be if the father in the drama really thinks that he is the father. Even if the drama is over, he is thinking that he is the father. And even in the drama, he forgets that he is the father. The drama is a drama. The father should always be aware of what he truly is. And Swami says, you truly are the Atma. You should never forget that. Knowing that, you do whatever role you have to do in this drama of life, then this will not affect you much. Then you can be happy. Worries will not capsize your mind and heart. Swami says, some people complain, I have offered everything to God. I have surrendered to Him. Then why am I put to so many difficulties? Why is God making me undergo so much suffering? I have surrendered to Him. Swami says, when your surrender is total, how can you have difficulties? How can you have the feeling that you are suffering? You will not have such thoughts. If your surrender is total, you won't even have such thoughts. You will not consider anything as a difficulty and worry about it because you have surrendered. If you are worried, it only means that you have not surrendered to God completely. One who has totally surrendered to the Lord will not care for any worries, Swami says. God is in you, but when you lack the faith that God is in me, you will be surrounded by worries, Swami says. So when we say that we have surrendered to God, if we have truly surrendered to God, then we should never be even having slightest thought that I am suffering. No, you cannot suffer. You have already offered it to God. Saint Purandaradasa used to very beautifully sing, O Lord, I am born in this world because I have forgotten you. If I had not forgotten you, I would not have been born in this world. And then he says, O Lord, as long as you are by my side, how can I become an orphan or a destitute? You are the one who grants me wisdom and knowledge. You are my Redeemer. You are my Supreme Savior. You are the bestower of all the 8 types of wealth. When I have you, why should I worry? Even if the sky falls on my head, I will not be afraid. I have your support in all situations. When you are in me, with me, above me, below me, why should I be afraid? I don't need to go elsewhere in search of you. You are always with me. Lord, you are the only doer. I am just a puppet in your hand. This is how Purandaradasa used to sing to the Lord, Bhagwan mentions in one of his discourses. See, if you have this kind of surrender, then you will never have worries. You will be in Ananda. Swami says, when a little sparrow perches on a tender branch of a tree, the sparrow is never afraid by the swaying of the branch. Even if there is a huge breeze, the bird is hardly affected because it is not depending on the strength of that branch. That branch can break, no problem, it will just fly away. It is depending on the strength of its wings. The sparrow has confidence in the strength of its own wings. Swami says that is how it should be for everyone. we should have that faith in our inner self. We should have that kind of confidence in the Lord once you surrender. Swami gives the example of Karna, and Swami says Karna was a greater warrior than Arjuna. He was born by the grace of sun god. Even though he was such a valorous one and he had such a blessed birth and he was so well endowed, but what happened? Karna, unfortunately, depended more on his physical strength and intelligence. He did not take refuge in Lord Krishna. He took the side of Duryodhana and Dushasana in Mahabharata. And why did he do this? Swami says, because of his ego. As we all know, in the Mahabharata, he was prevented from participating in the archery competition. And on that occasion, he did not know how to become part of that event, because he was neither a prince nor a warrior. The competition was open only for Kshatriyas. He was not a Kshatriya and he was not also a prince. And so when he went to that arena, everyone made fun of him, saying that you are the son of a charioteer and you don't have the deservedness to compete with the Kshatriyas, with the warriors. And even though Karna was very eager to participate, he was not given an opportunity, and he feeling very humiliated, Karna was leaving that event. And that is when Duryodhana called him back, and Duryodhana told him that I will make you the king of Anga. I'm giving a part of the kingdom, a little kingdom to you. So you are now a king, so you can now participate. Swami says, even though Karna knew that Duryodhana is a wicked person, but Karna became his close friend because of gratitude to him. And that is when that attachment to Duryodhana started. And many times we would feel that, what could Karna have done? I mean, Duryodhana came to the rescue of Karna at that point in time. Karna rightfully deserved to participate in the competition. He had the talent, just that he was not a Kshatriya. I mean, those who know the story, behind the story, he was truly also a Kshatriya. He was born to Kunti, but somehow because of the nature of circumstances, he was raised by a charioteer, and that is how the world knew him, as the son of a charioteer. And he was being humiliated, and Duryodhana saved his honor, and so Karna, out of gratitude, became very close to him and developed that attachment with Duryodhana. It all seems right what Karna had done. He had the talent and he was not being recognized. But Swami says that instead of depending on Duryodhana, if Karna would have depended on the Lord, his life would have been different. Because he felt that I have all the strength, I have the intellect, I have this archery power in me, I have this talent. So whoever helps me, I'm okay with that. Because he felt that I am so good, I can prove myself. And because of this ego, Swami says, unfortunately, he forgot God. He forgot to depend on God. He forgot to see God's compassion, he forgot to seek refuge at the feet of God for his growth, for his recognition. Who knows? On that occasion, when Karna was not given the opportunity, maybe something, if Karna had prayed to the Lord at that moment, maybe God would have done something else at that point in time to give him that opportunity. Or something else could have happened later on, and he could have probably got a bigger arena to showcase his talent. But just because he was so full of pride of his talent that Karna closed his eyes and took the help of Duryodhana. And Duryodhana, at that point in time, he was just being clever. He wanted to use Karna because he wanted someone to deal with Arjuna, and he felt, if I have Karna, then I have a competitor against Arjuna. So he was just being used by Duryodhana. If only Karna had thought of Krishna, had thought of God, had thought of the divine at that point in time and prayed to the divine, then he could not have led a life where every second of his life he felt what is happening is not correct, but he was part of it and he could not help it, and he almost, and together he also began to be colored in his thinking. He also became part of that scene in Mahabharata when Draupadi was disrobed, and he also became part of that scene. He also encouraged, he forgot, he lost his moorings because of his company. So Swami says, it is so important that we must learn to depend on the divine. We must learn to take refuge at the feet of the divine. That will ensure that we will not have any worries. Karna constantly had this battle all through his life. Every night, I think when he was coming back, he was not liking the adharmic ways of Duryodhana, the way Duryodhana and his brothers were doing different things. He did not like their approach, he did not like their schemes, he did not like their manipulations, but he could not just do anything. Every day it was a dilemma. But the Pandavas, even though they were in the forest and even though they were going through seemingly these hardships, but Krishna was with them and every problem was just getting solved because Krishna was with them. Every naughty issue had a solution and a magical solution. And out of nowhere, things were falling into place for them. Even though it looked like they were going through very difficult times to the outside world, that is because they had surrendered to Krishna. So that is what Bhagavan is telling us. You will have no fear. You will live in Ananda if you learn to offer all your worries to God. Then you will not have fear. You will not have any feeling of cowardice. You will be in Ananda. Fear and anxiety get entrenched in a heart devoid of love, Swami says. A heart filled with love for the divine will enjoy peace and be totally free of fear. Fear and cowardice comes only when your heart is not having enough love. If your heart is full of divine love, you will be in peace. You will be free from fear. In the eternal spirit of man, love shines as pure and eternally effulgent flame, Swami says. Fear is always when there is some impurity, where there is some lack of truth, where there is lack of love. Bhagwan in a discourse gives very beautifully this one story from the life of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Once a mendicant with tattered clothes and unkempt hair and his body looking shabby came and stood at the threshold of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's room, and Sri Chaitanya was in meditation. After some time, when he opened his eyes, Sri Chaitanya saw this ascetic who definitely needed help, and he asked him, "Who are you? Come inside, you can come inside." And when this mendicant heard the soft, welcoming words of Sri Chaitanya, in all humility he replied, "Oh Swami, I don't deserve to step into your room. I am a despicable person. I belong to the lower caste of untouchables. I am unfit to step into your residence. I will defile the sacredness of your home." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled. He went closer to him and said, "My son, never say that you are mean, you are despicable, you are unworthy. Who is mean and who is sacred on this earth? All are sacred because the same God shines in everyone's heart. Come inside, don't have any hesitation." But the mendicant was still hesitating to go inside. Chaitanya asked him, "Tell me, why have you come here?" And then this strange visitor says to Chaitanya, "Swami, I am repeatedly chanting God's name, but I feel it lacks that spiritual power. It is something like a person in a state of coma has life, but he has no consciousness. I am feeling that I am chanting the Lord's name, but it is not having that potent power in it. It is still very lifeless. I am mechanically chanting the Lord's name. I am not experiencing the power of the divine. I have come to you with the hope that if you initiate me in one of the Lord's names, maybe I will be charged with spiritual potency and I will be benefited by chanting such a name. On my own I have been doing, but I am not feeling the power of the presence of the divine." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, listening to the request of this ascetic, says, "All the names of God are full of Chaitanya, they are full of divine power. God's name is self-effulgent. So don't underrate the efficacy of any of the Lord's names. But for your satisfaction, I will give you mantropadesha. I will initiate you into the sacred mantra, into a sacred name as desired by you. Come into my house, no problem." And now the visitor slowly was entering the room, full of hesitation, humility, nervousness and fear. And he came and he sat in one corner of the room. And now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, "Tell me, why are you so full of fear? Freedom and fearlessness are the birthright of every man. Freedom is your real nature. Why are you giving room for fear? You must recognize that the atmic power is behind all thoughts. Give up fear." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhorts this person. And now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes closer and closer to this mendicant. And now the mendicant cries out very apprehensively, "Oh Swami, don't touch me. If you touch me, you know what will happen. both of us will be guilty of breach of the traditional norms of our society. And you are such a respectable person. I don't want someone to say wrong things about you. If you touch me, you will have to go and take bath again. And it is so cold now, I don't want you to spoil your health because of me. You are going to give me a mantra. You are like God for me. I can't be sinning against God. I can't hurt you in this manner. I am what I am because of the sins in my past life. I am now an untouchable. But I don't want to add to my loads of sins by allowing you to touch me now. This is what the mendicant says to Chaitanya. And Chaitanya immediately remonstrates this mendicant and says, how foolish you are. You are only betraying your ignorance by observing untouchability. You are ignoring the divinity inherent in every being. God has no distinctions of caste and creed. There is no caste for any of the five elements. There is no caste for earth, water, fire, earth, ether, sky. Everything has come from God. All are equally sharing the bounties of nature offered by the five elements. There is no need to observe such differences of caste and creed. Come closer to me. Don't worry. And now, the mendicant was still so full of fear, because that is how he was conditioned right from his childhood. And Chaitanya tells the mendicant, God endows man with fear. It is our own weakness that fosters fear. Because of shortcomings in our own self, we have to fear only if we have committed something wrong. Fearlessness is the hallmark of divinity. One can become fearless through sacrifice, through renunciation. Swami says, if you have some valuables with you, then you will have room for fear. But if you have given up those valuables, then you have no fear. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, absolute fearlessness is your very nature. Remain true to your nature. And saying this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in spite of the hesitations of the mendicant, goes closer and he hugs the mendicant. And that ascetic, he begins to shake with mixed feelings of fear and bliss. The Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is hugging him, is embracing him. And the mendicant cries out, hope my sins don't pollute you, hope my sins don't pollute you. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu laughs and he says, what do you mean you? You and I have become one now. We are no longer separate. And he holds him in a tight embrace and he whispers Lord's name into his ear. That name goes straight into the man's heart. And it is so transforming for him. He says, there is no one as lucky as myself. I have now become sanctified. I am pure. I am sacred. I have got rid of my wrong notion that I am the body. Your grace has completely cleared all ignorance out of my being. And that is how, from then on, he chants the name of the Lord. And now when he chants the name of the Lord, it has a power of its own. And this saint's name is Haridas. Haridas Thakur, as they say. They say that he used to chant 300,000 times the Lord's name every day, every single day. 3 lakh times used to chant the name of the Lord. And there were a lot of people who used to create many troubles for Haridas. Someone came and quoted the Vedas and said, loud chanting of Krishna's name is not good. You should do silent chanting. And Haridas quoted Srimad Bhagavatam and said, it is clearly told in the sacred text that anyone who chants the name purifies all who hear the chanting as well as purifies himself. And Haridas says, you tell me which is better. Is it good to feed yourself or also to feed yourself and simultaneously feed 1,000 others? That is what I am doing when I am chanting loudly the name of the Lord. I am feeding myself and I am feeding 1,000 others. And they say that Haridas, even though he was the connoisseur of chanting the Lord's name incessantly, he was called a Namacharya. He taught everyone how to enter into ecstasy through the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. But there was a Muslim ruler who constantly troubled Haridas, because apparently Haridas was born in a Muslim family and he later converted to Vaishnavism, and that is what angered this Muslim ruler, and he threatened him saying, either you give up your belief or you die. And Haridas firmly replied, if my body is hacked to pieces and even if I am killed, still I will keep chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And this infuriated the Muslim ruler, the Qazi, and he ordered that Haridas should be publicly whipped to death. And so he was brutally beaten and he was dragged through the market and he was thrown in the Ganges, they say. But even as he was, when he was going through all this, just like nothing affected Prahlada when he was thrown from the mountains or he was drowned in the sea or he was being subjected to angry elephants, they saw that miraculously Haridas survived everything and he was lost chanting the name of Hari. When the rivals, when this Muslim ruler saw the way Haridas was being protected by the divine, that is when they ran and fell at his feet and sought his forgiveness. And Haridas forgave them. He forgave them and he told them, may you be blessed with devotion. In fact, Haridas said, whatever I went through, that was right. That was a fit punishment, because I heard Vaishnava blasphemy from the mouth. It is a punishment that I should undergo for hearing these unholy things being said about Krishna. Because I heard those things, I deserve to go through this punishment. He didn't hold them responsible. He forgave them. And they say, with the time Haridas came and lived along with Chaitanya, they were neighbors. And the only prayer Haridasa had in Jagannath Puri, where Lord Chaitanya was, that he should leave his body by looking at the lotus face of Lord Chaitanya, holding his feet upon his chest and chanting Shri Krishna Chaitanya. That was the only wish he had, and that is exactly how he merged. In fact, Lord Chaitanya personally carried the body of Haridasa to the sea. With his own hands, he buried him in the sand and he did the funeral rites. He begged alms for a festival to honor Haridasa's departure. And Lord Chaitanya paid tribute to this purest of devotees by saying, "Let us all sing the glories of Haridasa. Haridasa was the crest jewel of the world. By his death, the earth has lost its treasure. Out of his great mercy, Krishna had given me his association. But now, he has taken him away. When Haridasa himself wished to leave the world, how could I hold him back? He gave up his life at his own will." This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. Haridasa, because he had completely surrendered to the Lord, he was in that ananda, that's why he had no fear, no matter what he was put through, just like Prahlada had no fear, no matter what he was put through. So even if we are being put through challenges in our office, in our corporate world, in our business, in our family, can we have this kind of surrender to the Lord? Can we have this kind of faith? Can we have this kind of complete dependence on the Lord so that nothing will affect us? And this will happen only if we can fill our heart with divine love. Swami says, as long as one is unable to understand the principle of love, one can never be free from fear and anxiety. The moment love awakens, fear flees. Once you have love in your heart, then there is no fear. Fear cannot touch you. Swami says, life is one long journey, but in this journey, if you have the pure, selfless love of God within you, you can go anywhere free from fear and worry of any kind. And that is what Saint Tyagaraja also says, "O Rama, when I have the benefit of your anugraha, what can Navagrahas do to me? When I have your blessings, your grace, what can the nine planets do to me?" And there is no reason for us to have any fear. And that's what Swami says, give up cowardice, give up worries, give up fear, and hold on to ananda. Hold on to ananda means hold on to love, hold on to the Lord. If we can hold on to the Lord, then we will never have any fear. And this is in fact the message that Swami gave on the very day Prashantanilam was inaugurated. Why fear when I am here? So dear listeners, this is the beautiful message of Bhagavan, the 35th point in chapter 7 of Sandhya Nivarani. Yield not to cowardice, hold on to ananda. As always, please feel free to share your thoughts on what you feel about what we are discussing in this segment. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. If you have any queries, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Really grateful to all of you for being with me through this beautiful journey. And of course, beholden to Bhagwan for this opportunity to soak in the bliss of his message. Thank you so much. With this, we come to the end of this episode of Vahini Satsang, as well as the day-long Thursday Live. Thank you so much. Sairam.